just when they thought they had him. Just when the Wile E. Coyote libs thought they finally had Roadrunner Donald Trump and New York Attorney General Letitia James was bragging about how she was about to take one of Trump's buildings from him to pay off a ridiculous civil judgment. Just when all hope looked lost, President Covfefe scored a major legal win. An appeals court just lowered the impossible $464 million bond that Trump was supposed to come up with to a still insane, but actually doable if you're Donald Trump, $175 million bond. The court also ruled that Trump can continue to run his business in New York, and it gave him extra time to come up with that money. For what is, by my count, the, I don't know, 5,358th time, I'm approximating here, that Trump has evaded the schemes of the liberals, he took the opportunity to celebrate.
And that was done by Biden and his thugs also, because they can't win an election because of the borders, because of energy prices, because of inflation, because of Afghanistan, the worst and most embarrassing day in the history of our country. He can't win because of Russia, because of all the problems, because of Ukraine being attacked by Russia. And he can't win because of the October 7th attack of Israel, which he should have never allowed to happen, would have never happened if I were president. Ukraine would have never been attacked if I was president. And you wouldn't have inflation if I was president. We didn't have inflation. So all of these things, so what they do is they do election interference, which is court cases, and let's try and tie him up and let's take as much of his money as possible. I respect the appellate division for substantially reducing that ridiculous amount of money that was put on by a corrupt judge.
Election interference. That's the key phrase. He took a great opportunity here to just punch Biden, and they knew all the cameras would be on Trump. So instead of just talking about the judgment, he just kind of throws it away as an aside. And I want to thank that judge. You know, I appreciate what he did there. But anyway, the inflation, Gaza, Ukraine. And so he's just taking all the cameras, all the attention that he attracts, like a light attracts moths. He is just using that opportunity to bash Biden. But the key phrase here, and I think the phrase that will resonate with a lot of people, is election interference. All the prosecutions, all the civil rulings. The liberals think that all of those things are going to really hurt Trump's campaign. What he's saying is, no, they're going to help my campaign because people know it's unfair. They know that all this is really about is election interference, all the spying, all the investigations, all the voting rule changes, all the attempts to bankrupt him. All of it is about stopping Trump from getting elected. If this guy weren't running for president again, if this guy had not run for president the first time, if this guy were not the kind of Republican that the liberal establishment hates in particular, none of this would be happening. So they throw everything in the kitchen sink at him. Some of their efforts have been more successful than others. But this tactic, at least, has failed. And it failed spectacularly. Because on the same day that they lowered Trump's bond to a manageable amount, Trump also received some more good news. Within 24 hours, his net worth is expected to increase by $3 billion. I'm Michael Knowles. This is The Michael Knowles Show. Welcome back to the show. Some really horrifying news breaking right now, which is that the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore has collapsed after a cargo ship hit one of the supports. We haven't seen anything like this in, the last incident that comes to mind is, you know, around 9/11. Obviously, that involves buildings and airplanes, not bridges and ships. I don't think it's an exaggeration to say we haven't seen an incident like this, just a totally unexpected incident where a vessel was moving and knocked down a major piece of the skyline. There are numbers coming in all over the place as to how many are injured, how many are killed. Anyway, we'll get to it in just a moment. First, however, head on over to dailywire.com/shop. The Daily Wire will stop selling all sorts of things, including the Smells and Bells candle, which is a Lenten special. After Easter, they are now selling in 2 and 3 packs for more savings, and in part because I know a lot of people want to stock up before they're gone. So head on over there right now. Go to dailywire.com/shop. Trump's net worth is increasing by about $3 billion within the next 24 hours. How is that possible? Because Truth Social, which is Trump's Twitter alternative, starts trading today. If you're looking for the stock price and how the thing is going, it's a little confusing because Truth Social is going public through a SPAC, this special purpose acquisition company, which is a holding company, a shell company that was able to raise money, but it didn't have any underlying company. The whole point of the SPAC is to just go and acquire another company. So they're acquiring Truth Social, and shares of that holding company have been all over the place. On Friday, after this merger was approved, the stock fell. It fell 13.7%. But then in afternoon trading yesterday, the stock jumped up 22%, jumped up to over $45 per share. And then I don't know where it ended. I mean, it was kind of all over the place. But at one point yesterday afternoon, it was about $51 per share. So in any case, Trump's net worth is going to be fluctuating wildly. But Trump's shares could be worth $3 billion or more. It's really unclear. We'll wait to see where the price finally settles. It's just a rabbit out of a hat for Trump, though. He already had the backup plan, which is the judge reduced that civil fraud settlement. You got the four prosecutions where the Democrats are trying to throw Trump in prison. But then there was also this civil judgment, which said that 1 million years ago, Trump, you know, didn't fill out Form 57B totally correctly when he was getting a loan. And because he may have misvalued his properties, he now owes almost $500 million to the New York Attorney General, who campaigned for office specifically on destroying Donald Trump. It's so totally ridiculous. So an appeals court judge came in and said, all right, we're substantially reducing this fee that the corrupt AG in New York is trying to charge him. But even if that judgment had not come in, which now allows Trump to pay the bond, which then prevents the New York Attorney General from seizing one of his properties, such as Trump Tower, such as his building on Wall Street, which you know the New York Attorney General wants to do. She openly talked about it. But even if that had not happened, Trump just pulls this rabbit out of the hat, which is he sells his social media company for a substantial amount of money and increases his net worth by $3 billion. How is Joe Biden responding to this news? That just when they think they've got Trump, that dastardly Trump got away from us again. The way Biden is responding is by trying to come up with a new nickname for him. That's it. That's about all he's got left. Biden tested out this nickname. Not that Biden even really knows what this nickname is. Not that Biden knows what his own name is anymore. But the Biden campaign tried this out. They sent out an email referring to Trump as Broke Don. It's kind of funny too. It's, you know, Biden can't win for losing. They try out this new nickname, Broke Don, and then 5 seconds later, Trump, you know, doubles his net more than doubles his net worth. Who knows what is he worth now? Probably $500 million, in at least according to him, in cash, and plus all of the properties. But right when it looks like Trump is all out of money, his wealth increases a lot. Broke Don was the name that they use in this Biden-Harris fundraiser email. It's so cringe. It's so obviously not true. And even if the nickname were apt, Biden is not the kind of guy to do it. This has never worked. Trump is good at nicknames. Low Energy Jeb, Lion Ted, Little Marco, he's got a nickname for everybody. Trump's very good at them. They tend to be evocative. They tend to stick. Then his opponents try to slap him with a nickname. They try to do the comedy routine with him. You remember Marco Rubio did this whole Don Rickles bit, basically, in the 2016 race. where he was insinuating that President Trump is not well endowed because his hands are small or something. And it just flopped. It doesn't work. You can't, never get into a debate with a comedian is a lesson that I've learned in show business and politics. Not because the comedian is necessarily smarter, maybe the comedian isn't, not because the comedian is better educated, often he would not be, but because you can't beat a comedian, man. You know, he's going to be funnier. He's going to have the audience more on his side. And Trump is the best living comedian in the United States. So, and certainly don't try to play his game. It's not just me saying this, by the way. Obviously, I have a great deal of affection for President Trump. There's even an anonymous, wishes to remain anonymous, Democrat strategist told The Hill that this is a terrible strategy. Said, mimicking Trump has been done before, has never really worked. You can't out-Trump Trump because he's the original version. I would say they need to be more creative in producing their own original and unique strategy to bring him down a peg that shocks and awes. Very true. This is the kind of thing I've been saying for years now, and especially said during the Republican primary. You can't out-Trump Trump. If you're running to be, I'm the better, bigger, faster Trump. I'm the more disciplined Trump. I'm the Trump without the baggage. It's not going to work. Or if you're a Democrat, you say, yeah, well, I'm going to be just as nasty and tough and funny as Trump. No, you're not, especially not if you're Joe Biden and you can barely walk anymore. No, it's not going to happen. So you need to come up with your own original strategy, but you can't because you have nothing to sell because the country's falling apart around you. So what are you going to do? You just have to try to get this guy to just grab him by his by the cuff of his trousers and just hold him down, but you can't. He just keeps slipping away from you. And that is causing the libs to collapse. There's so much more to say. First, though, text Knowles to 989898. Despite the anticipated rate cuts by financial experts, inflation continues to rise. The U.S. is grappling with a staggering debt of $34 trillion. And yet, what do? We continue to print more money, driving up the prices of everyday essentials even further. You can bury your head in the sand, or you can do something about it. Consider diversifying at least some of your savings into gold with Birch Gold Group. As a leading dealer of precious metals in the U.S., Birch Gold is committed to helping you discover how gold, silver, and other precious metals can help protect your lifestyle in the face of current and coming economic instabilities. Birch Gold makes it easy to own gold. They will help you convert your existing IRA or 401k into a tax-sheltered IRA in gold, and you won't pay a penny out of pocket. Make gold part of your saving strategy with Birch Gold. They've been the exclusive gold partner of the Daily Wire for over 7 years, helping thousands of our listeners, and they can help you too. Text Knowles, K-N-O-W-L-E-S, to 989898. Get your free info kit on gold. Then talk to a precious metal specialist about protecting your savings from persistent inflation with gold. Text Knowles, K-N-O-W-L-E-S, to 989898 now. Speaking of attacking Republicans, the former chairman of the RNC, Ronna McDaniel, is out. Trump replaced her with people who were more tightly associated with his campaign. Even though Ronna was something of an ally to him when he was in the White House, she's out. She needs a new job. And there are a few ways that former top-ranking political staffers can go when they leave office. They can either go to a think tank. That's not usually what the operatives do, though, because the operatives are not scholars. They're not policy wonks. They're campaign guys. So think tanks probably not the main spot. They can become lobbyists if they have enough pull. But again, if you're just working for the committee, if you're a former member of Congress or something, maybe you do that. Even if you're a top staffer for Congress, maybe you do that. If you're just working for the committee, if you're working on more on the campaign side, that's probably not going to work. So then you can become a commentator. You can either become a media consultant, that's sometimes they do that, or you become a political commentator. That's the more tried and true route. And if you're going to become a Republican political commentator, you have to make a choice early on. Are you going to be a commentator among your fellow Republican and conservative outlets, or are you going to be the token Republican on the liberal outlets? And it just totally different routes. It kind of depends on your perspective of politics, what you hope to accomplish in politics. Obviously, in as much as I am in conservative and Republican politics, I'm more the conservative's conservative. I'm more the Republican's Republican. I'm kind of with my own team. I would be more than happy to go on CNN. I would be more than happy to go on NBC and, you know, shed a little light on things that they seem to be confused by. But they don't invite me on. They don't want a a conservative to come on and articulate the conservative point of view in a way that can't be mocked or dismissed or inveighed against. So there's a different type of conservative who goes on those channels. That's the squishy kind, the one who can go on there and say, well, look, I'm a conservative, but I totally hate Donald Trump and I hate all the elected Republicans. And I'm totally in favor of abortion and redefining marriage and opening up our borders and on and on and on and on. And so that they're really just fake Republicans. They're the court jesters in the kingdom of liberalism. And that can work. Joe Scarborough does that. Anna Navarro does that on The View. You know, they pretend to be conservatives, Adam Kinzinger, Liz Cheney, but they always just agree with the liberal hosts. Where things get really messy is when a conservative goes on as a conservative, says, no, I support Trump. You know, I like when Republicans win. I want the party to become more conservative. And when the conservatives go on the liberal networks, the networks lose their minds. It usually doesn't work. That's what happened to Ronna McDaniel, who took a job at NBC. And in her first day of appearances, she gets absolutely grilled. I mean, I won't even show you the clip because it's not even in the top three most interesting clips probably that came out of that day, her first time at NBC. But she goes on, the host of Meet the Press is very, very rude to Ronna, asks for an apology to the American people. And then, if that were not enough, Chuck Todd, who used to host Meet the Press, comes on as a guest to continue attacking his new colleague at NBC, Ronna McDaniel.
Let me deal with the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
I think our bosses owe you an apology for putting you in this situation, because I don't know what to believe. She is now a paid contributor by NBC News. Well, I have no idea whether any answer she gave to you was because she didn't want to mess up her contract. She wants us to believe that she was speaking for the RNC when the RNC was paying for it. So she has credibility issues that she still has to deal with.
Yeah.
Is she speaking for herself or is she speaking on behalf of who's paying her? What, once at the RNC, she did say that, hey, I'm speaking for the party. I get that. That's part of the job. So what about here? I will say this. I think your interview...
Put a pause here. I'm sorry. You have to put a pause here. I was going to wait till the end of the clip, but what is this man saying? He's saying she has real credibility issues here because she's being paid to speak on television. So how do we know she's not parroting the views of her employer? Yeah, Chuck, so are you. So is that lady who took your show, who's currently hosting Meet the Press. So is Michael Steele, the former head of the RNC who had Ronna McDaniel's job. He became an NBC contributor after that. But he's a liberal Republican, so you never really hear too much about his credibility. So is every commentator and host on this network. They're all being paid by NBC, so do they all have the same credibility issues? Well, he says, no, but before, you don't understand. Yeah, sure, okay, now she's being paid by NBC, but before, she was being paid by the Republican National Committee. Yeah, right, doesn't Jen Psaki host a show for you guys? Jen Psaki, the former White House press secretary, the spokesman for Joe Biden? She hosts a show. We don't hear about her credibility issues. But you all do. Everybody gets, if you work a job, you get paid by somebody. Ironically, what Chuck Todd is really upset about here is that Ronna McDaniel is not just parroting the views of the people who pay her. She's doing the opposite. She's contradicting the views of the people who pay her. The people who pay her hate Donald Trump and want to banish him to St. Helena so he can die in exile. Ronna McDaniel likes Donald Trump and worked with Donald Trump and wants to see him reelected again this year. And you can't stand that. So I can't tell if he's playing dumb or if he is dumb. And I don't know what the more charitable view is. Is he a liar or is he just that dense that he doesn't understand what a political commentator does? He doesn't understand what a TV presenter does. Does he really? That's been his whole career. Or is he just being obtuse? Or does he just hate Ronna McDaniel because she's just a stand-in for Trump and the Republican Party that Trump leads? And so he's just very disingenuously attacking her for doing her job in a much more credible way than he does his job. Keep going.
Did a good job of exposing, I think, many of the contradictions. And look, there's a reason why there's a lot of journalists at NBC News uncomfortable with this, because many of our professional dealings with the RNC over the last 6 years have been met with gaslighting, have been met with character assassination. So that's where you begin here.
Well, he's almost being honest there. It's really rich to hear an NBC News propagandist accuse others of gaslighting, these people who pushed every ridiculous hoax about Trump and the Republicans of the last 8 years, every hoax cooked up by the intelligence agencies or the Hillary Clinton campaign or actual foreign intelligence like the Russians that they accused Trump of colluding with. It was actually they who colluded with them. Of him to accuse others of gaslighting, it's very, very rich. But he does get a little bit to his real problem with Ron McDaniel, which is he says, I hate the Republican Party. We dealt with the RNC and the RNC pushed back on us and the RNC didn't just roll over and the RNC had the audacity occasionally to win. And so we journalists at NBC, we hate that because we hate the Republican Party because we hate Trump and Republican voters and we want them to shut up. And not only are they not shutting up, but now we're paying them to speak and that we can't have that. We cannot have an actual Republican, whatever you think of Ronna McDaniel, I think she did her best. She tried. She wants Republicans to win. We can't have an actual Republican trying to win and articulate their views and persuade people on our network. This is a journalistic outlet, for goodness sakes. This is a news channel. We can't have Republicans speaking on here. There's so much more to say. First, though, go to pepperdine.edu/Knowles. If you are passionate about pursuing a political career, that was very alliterative, and you want to take the next step, apply to the Pepperdine School of Public Policy. Whoa, Pepperdine School of Public Policy stands out among the 200-plus graduate policy programs in the country as one of the few that is based out of a Christian university. This program equips leaders to apply America's timeless principles to today's policy issues. The unique curriculum balances a rigorous study of history and philosophy with the latest tools of economics and research analytics. Pepperdine School of Public Policy sits at the top of Malibu, California, some of the most beautiful real estate in the entire country. The campus is nestled in the rolling foothills of the Santa Monica Mountains and overlooks scenic beaches along the Pacific Ocean. For our listeners only, the School of Public Policy is offering a guaranteed $2,000 scholarship on top of normal scholarship offerings when you go to pepperdine.edu/Knowles, K-N-O-W-L-E-S. That is pepperdine.edu/Knowles, K-N-O-W-L-E-S, to request more information and start your application. If you love the controversial Yes or No Show, if you enjoy triggering get-togethers with the Daily Wire's best-selling party game, then buckle up, buckaroo. Now listen here, buckle, you better buckle up. The full uncensored library of Yes or No episodes is now available exclusively for subscribers on DailyWire.com. Like my episode with Michael Malice, which had several questions removed on certain big tech platforms. Take a look.
Manifesting is astrology for straight guys.
Do you manifest?
Let's just give your answer. One, two, three.
Get the classic Yes or No game, maybe even the Conspiracy Expansion Pack, featuring over 110 new cards today. DailyWire.com/shop. Get yours before they're gone. Speaking of whining, a lot of whining over at NBC News, Boston race hustlers are now shaking down the city and specifically white churches for $15 billion. Here's why.
We call on the white church in Boston to join us in supporting a black reparations movement.
Standing in solidarity, clergy leaders from across the city of Boston gathered for an interfaith, multiracial meeting at the Resurrection Lutheran Church in Roxbury, Nubian Square. They're here to ask the religious community to atone for black Boston suffering and support black reparations.
And we are coming, as Dr. King said, to get our check.
Organizers from the Boston People's Reparation Commission say they're also following up on their demand on the city of Boston for a $15 billion initial payout to begin the process towards repair and reconciliation to the city's black community.
$5 billion as initial payment around cash payouts, $5 billion around strengthening our financial institutions, creating a new black bank, $5 billion in terms of addressing issues of the education achievement gap between blacks and whites.
In 2022, the Boston City Council and Mayor Michelle Wu offered an official apology for the city's involvement in the transatlantic slave trade.
Wow. Wow. Boy, oh boy. I guess they got some accountant in there. They said, okay, because of the transatlantic slave trade of 300 years ago, you owe, when you carry the interest rate, this is some like New York Letitia James kind of math, you owe $15 billion. And it's got to come out of the taxpayers of Boston for some reason, and specifically out of white churches. So says Reverend so-and-so, that young guy, I guess he's the new black race hustler. I don't know his name, but I saw he had Reverend something. So he's the new Jesse Jackson. He's the new Al Sharpton. It's a pretty lucrative job. I think it's undignified work, but it can definitely be lucrative. Al Sharpton's worn a lot of nice suits for many years now, just trying to stir the pot on race relations and demand endless money. In this case now from white churches. And it's sad to me, as a mackerel snapping papist myself, a member of a church that is called the Universal Church, the Catholic Church, it's very sad to see these terms like white churches, black churches, because, you know, for the Catholic Church, we don't really view things that way. I guess with some of the immigrant groups in America, you'd say, oh, it's an Irish parish, that's an Italian parish. But the church broadly, you know, encompasses all races. You go to mass, you'll see people of all different races, and they're all kind of mixed up together. The churches had white saints and black saints and Asian saints and all sorts of saints for a very long time. But the fact that certain sects can divvy themselves up and say, we're the black church and you're the white church, and so the white church has to give us $15 billion, that opens the door to a lot of really terrible actions. Politically terrible, spiritually damaging, just ultimately wrong. The reason I bring it up, though, is not because some race hustler guy who calls himself Reverend is, you know, running a racket that's been going on for many decades. It's to remind people, for even these, you know, the black activists demanding this who call themselves Reverend, or the white churches who might acquiesce and just give money to black people as part of some kind of shakedown scheme. The greatest saints could have been the worst sinners. And the worst sinners could be the greatest saints. This is a fact observed by many religious people over the years, that people have a great capacity. Some people have the capacity for acts of greatness and greater acts of greatness than others. And they can turn this to good ends, or they can turn this to evil ends. So when the church does what it's supposed to do, it's really, really great. And society flourishes, and souls are saved, and people live in accord with reason, and all of that leads to the flourishing of the common good. When the church goes wrong, when the church splinters up into a lot of pieces, when the church promotes vice, when the church even promotes one virtue to the exclusion of the other virtues, which is probably an even better definition of heresy, when the church falls into the trap of the fashions of the age and the racial ideologies that are so popular today, and when the church marries herself to the spirit of the age, which will leave her a widow in the next, you know, not the church, but all these little splinter groups, when all of that happens, the churches can be real, real bad, can go really, really bad. And they lose the salt loses its saltiness, and it's good for nothing. Something to watch out for. I mentioned yesterday, we're in Holy Week. This is when the devil's working overtime. This is when you got to watch out and pray that you fall not into temptation. Very easy to do. And then the churches become absolute caricatures. Speaking of sinners and saints and religion, some sad news, but it's interesting and maybe provides a little hint of what the solution can be. Church attendance is way down. Over the past 20 years, it has declined in most U.S. religious groups. The most religious groups in America in terms of regular attendance at religious services, the Mormons. The Mormons have kind of kept it together. 67% of Mormons regularly attend religious services. We have a few charts here. Oh, apparently none of my charts printed out. That's cool. Great. Well, in any case, I'll just kind of do it from memory. You see a big division between the Jews and the Christians, and then even within the Christians, the Catholics and the Protestants, and the Muslims and the Mormons. Jewish attendance at religious services was pretty low. It was lower than other groups 20 years ago. But it's increasing. And it's increasing by a lot. The Muslim attendance at religious services was somewhat higher than the Jews, and it's increasing by a little bit. Basically, every other group is decreasing. Mormon church attendance was very, very high, and it has decreased, but barely, I think by like 1 point. Catholic regular church attendance has collapsed. Protestants have declined too, but the Catholic church attendance has collapsed. It went from something like 45% to 25%. I'm getting the numbers a little bit off, but it's been brutal. So what's the determining factor here? Because we're not just focused on Christian groups. We're not just focused on, you know, the Catholics or the Protestants or the Mormons, who would call themselves Christian probably. Some Christians would say they are not Christian. Not even wading into that. We're also talking about the Jews and the Muslims. So what is the common factor here that leads to increased attendance at religious services, or at least is correlated with it? Seems to me it's community cohesion. For the Jews, it started out low. It's increasing significantly. The Jews have a lot of social cohesion, especially during periods where they perceive a threat or even an existential threat. The cohesion comes back in. There are all sorts of Jews who believe all sorts of things, who very often you see the caricature of the self-hating Jew, wants to disassociate from being Jewish or anything like that. But during periods where they're perceived to be persecuted, you get more social cohesion. The Jews refer to themselves as a tribe, as the tribe. So obviously you have a lot of community cohesion there. You have a similar degree, though a little bit less, of a community cohesion among Muslims, particularly in the United States, because Muslims in the United States tend to be relatively recent immigrants, or first generation, maybe second generation immigrants. So there, still, you have a ton of community cohesion. The Mormons, obviously, you have a ton of community cohesion. They all descend from this one particular religious movement that moved out west. They descend from the same families. They look very similar, they talk very similar, they behave very similarly. For the Catholics, not so much. For the Catholics, especially recently, because you've got the influx of mass migration, there's not a ton of community cohesion. There's been a lot of upending of Catholic norms and practices in recent years, particularly in the wake of the Second Vatican Council. That community cohesion is kind of collapsing. This is a broader point, even just for politics, putting religious questions aside for a second. We have this phrase that has crept into our politics because of an offhand comment by Vice President Dan Quayle to a reporter in Japan in the early 90s, you know, which said, "Diversity is our strength." That isn't true. That's never been true. Variety might be the spice of life, but diversity is not strength. Strength comes from unity. This doesn't mean that we have to kick out people who are of different races or different religions or whatever, but it means that we need to find something that unifies us nationally. We have to share some kind of unity. If we don't, as in recent years we do not, it's actually been discouraged to find any unity, then it's going to collapse. The country's going to collapse. Even beyond the question of, are you regularly attending church, which is related to national strength, by the way, but even putting that aside, if you don't have social cohesion, strong bonds that begin with the family, which is the bedrock unit of society, and expand outward in priorities of charity from there all the way up to the national level, which is an extension of filial piety, the love that you have for your parents, for your family, if you don't have that, the country's going to collapse. And when we then pair that with not only with loosening those bonds of social cohesion, but actually intentionally attacking the family, then you're in trouble. The church attendance declining is troubling to me because I care about people's souls, and I think it's just the most important thing in life is obviously to have a relationship with God, because God is the source and summit of all being and your maker, and love himself. And, he sends his only begotten son to die such that whoever believes in him might not perish but have eternal life. Obviously, we're in Holy Week right now. So I mean that, you know, as an intrinsic matter, this headline really bothers me. But also, even if it didn't, even if I never went to church, as a political matter, the trend lines are not great here. And it shows us that other national trends are a real danger. Now, you want to talk about community cohesion. Sometimes communities come together in the face of a political threat to do things that are very good. You're seeing this now throughout the United States, most recently in Wyoming. If there's one political issue that I think has united all sorts of people, certainly the conservatives, but even a lot of independents, even liberals in recent years, it's the observation that transing the kids is bad. It's just bad. Castrating little children, putting them on drugs that will probably reduce the length of their lives, that mess up their bones, that sterilize them, that lead to all sorts of problems, including depression, anxiety, and suicidality. That is bad, and we shouldn't do it. So now, Wyoming has just passed a law banning it, which makes Wyoming the 38th state to outlaw transing the kids. We were told that the transgender issue, this is just a thorny social issue, and you conservatives should lay off. The transgender issue might be the single most effective political issue for conservatives in the country today. Maybe it might be more powerful and lead to greater unity and political persuasiveness, even than immigration. We'll get to that in 1 second. First, though, the most requested item from Jeremy's is now back in stock. Jeremy's deodorant sticks to the ingredients that you can trust and pronounce. I'm talking about coconut oil, shea butter, not the 10,000 syllable chemical words, just basic, nice, clean stuff. Ingredients that make you smell great, but that are not toxic to masculinity, with no room for aluminum, phthalates, or talc. Am I pronouncing phthalates right? I like that word, phthalates. We care about what goes on your body. That is why our Jeremy's deodorant is made up of simple ingredients. No greasy surprises, no residue. It's what you requested, and it's back in stock. Go to jeremysrazors.com. Get yours today. My favorite comment yesterday is from MK Bubblehead. It's an interesting name. It says, can an ecosexual be a mine-attracted person? Wow, man. That is deep. That is calling on other crazy terms. It's got some pun to it. It's really... That's a chef's kiss favorite comment for yesterday. Wyoming, not Wisconsin. I sometimes confuse those two. Wyoming becomes the 38th state to ban transing the kids. This legislation was signed by Governor Mark Gordon. It prohibits, quote, physicians from performing procedures for children related to gender transitioning and gender reassignment. This is just happening. This is happening not only in the red states, it's happening around the country, not only around the country, but around the West. You remember a week or two ago, the NHS, National Health Service in the United Kingdom, somewhat quietly stopped transing the kids. They say, after reviewing this, we're not going to trans the kids anymore. That's over. France is moving toward that now. Even France, which is crazy and revolutionary and chops people's heads off, they want to stop chopping things off children because they realize it's totally gross and evil. And America too. The left has lost this issue. Period. It's amazing how it happened too, because this is a little bit of the secret story of this, but apt during Holy Week. A friend of mine discovered that the Vanderbilt gender clinic here, whatever, the Vanderbilt Hospital was transing kids. And he mentioned this to me. And he said, yeah, I've been going, I just pray a weekly rosary over there. I discovered this is really bad. And I said, well, we got to shut this down. We got to stop this. He goes, yeah, no, we do. We need all political action. And so the first thing I'm doing, though, is I'm going with some friends of mine. We're praying a weekly rosary and to shut down the Vanderbilt Gender Clinic. I said, oh man, okay. And then we're chatting. He might have said it directly to Matt, who at the time was doing the big What Is a Woman movie and all this. Maybe I mentioned it. But in any case, we all start to get to talking. And then Matt starts digging into it a little more, finding out stuff about it. And then there's he posts a big thread about it. It becomes a little bit of a national political issue. Matt holds a rally for it. So suddenly governors, state legislators are getting involved. And in no time, it was actually not that difficult because the people were on our side to shut that down. And then they're being shut down all around the country. Libs of TikTok, Kaya Raichik was on this issue. And it just spread very, very quickly. I love the kind of secret part of the story that people haven't talked about is it kind of began with a relatively private person just praying a rosary. It's just really great. And then, but it becomes a big political issue and it's a total winner. It's a total winner. And it's over. On a lot of political issues, I would say, you never know if we're going to win. These are eternal questions. No, castrating children is not really one of the eternal recurring things. I guess it pops up every so often over time, but it's one where we actually can win. And on this issue, we have won. And that is very good. You see it in France now. I mean, there was just, when I say it's already starting to happen in France, I mean, a group of senators has reacted to a report that shows how awful transing the kids is. It's not even the far right group of senators. It's the center right group. It's not the Front National, which I think is called National Rally now. That's the one led by Le Pen. That's considered far right, you know, I think a ridiculous term, but that's what it's called in the press. This is just the Republicans, which is more the center right party in France. This is a centrist issue and it's a total winner. Speaking of protecting kids, beyond the trans stuff, Florida under Governor Ron DeSantis just passed a law banning social media for kids. Mm-hmm. I love this story. I love it. This is a great law. This is a great idea. Every Republican in the country should follow it. Florida will now have one of the country's most restrictive social media bans for minors. DeSantis just signed it yesterday. It will ban social media accounts for children under 14, and it will require parental permission for 15 and 16-year-olds. DeSantis actually there was a proposal that DeSantis vetoed earlier this month. It was a little tougher, but this is still pretty tough. No social media if you're under 14 and parental permission if you're under 17. It was the top priority for the Republican Speaker, Paul Renner. Takes effect January 1st of next year. This is totally right. This is great legislation and it will separate the conservatives from the libertarians. The libertarians will say that we just need individual rights. We don't need the big government passing any more restrictions. Sure, big tech might be against us, but if we empower the government to restrict them, then what's the limit? They're going to go and I don't know. They're going to take your guns and I don't know. They're going to say the government can do anything. No. This is a conservative wielding political power in Florida with a targeted piece of legislation to stop kids from using social media, which can poison their minds. There have been plenty of studies on this. Social media use can lead to increased anxiety, depression, suicidality, even in kids. The left pretends to care about this when it comes to the sexual confusion that they implant in the children often. But when it comes to social media, they don't want to do it. They don't want to touch it. Because social media is a great vessel for indoctrinating kids in all of the crazy theories that the left promotes. So the Republican governor comes in, he says, nope, not doing it, kids, sorry. I mean, the thought of giving your kid a smartphone seems to me so crazy. My kids are very little right now. Maybe I'll cave when the time comes, but I don't think I will because those smartphones are like portals to hell and you need to be able to have some discipline whatsoever. 13-year-olds sure don't have that. This is great stuff. The conservatives will say, yeah, social media, very bad. Children not capable of using their reason in its totality, not particularly disciplined. We need to restrict that. Love it. I'm getting breaking news now. I mentioned earlier, I said yesterday in afternoon trading that Trump's Truth Social company was trading around $45 a share. It was insane. I mean, that was an amazing story in itself because some analysts thought it would hit at like $14 to $17 a share. Wow, $45. That's crazy. Then at one point in the afternoon, it was trading at about $51 a share, but still that was way too high. It was obviously going to come down, right? No. The new company, which is trading as DJT, Donald Trump's initials for the Trump Media Group. It just opened up at about $78 a share. As the libs are doing their best to bankrupt Trump, broke Don, Biden says 2 days ago, Trump is now richer maybe than he's ever been in his whole life. This guy's been a billionaire playboy for many decades now. And just when they think they steal all his money because he had the audacity to be a Republican president, he's now richer potentially than ever before. Okay. That's a great story. I do have to get to a really, really sad story because it's also breaking. A lot of breaking news, I guess, today. And really, really disturbing news, which is that the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore has tumbled down. The water is, I think, about 47 degrees last that it was checked. And it's unclear, according to the rescue operations, how many people are in the water, how many people have been rescued, how many people died. And then beyond the human tragedy, which is so awful, you've got this major piece of the Baltimore skyline and infrastructure just collapsing. We don't really know the cause. I've got some news here that was updated this morning. It's a cargo ship, a very large cargo ship. It hit around 1:30 in the morning, and then the bridge just collapsed. I mean, the ship started smoking, and then the bridge just went straight down. The mayor said it looked like something out of an action movie, which some will say is a kind of callous way to talk about it, but I'm sure he was just saying that from pure shock, and it's obviously true. A dire emergency. The ship was headed from Baltimore to Sri Lanka, and it was flying under a Singapore flag. So I know there are going to be all sorts of theories about, was this a terror attack? Was the ship hacked? Was it sabotaged in some other way? Is this, and I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there will be an investigation, and I'm not counting that out. I guess that could be possible. Also, unexpected things just happen. Unexpected major events like the collapse of this very famous bridge, it just happens. Sometimes a ship crashes into a bridge. And when that happens, sometimes it's sabotage or conspiracy, and sometimes it just unexpected political events just happen. Because one problem with falling into, you know, conspiratorial thinking. I know these days that the difference between a conspiracy theory and reality is about 6 months, but not all of them are true. A lot of them aren't true. The impulse to believe in all those things comes a little bit from the comfort of believing that everything's predictable, everything's in control. Even if we personally are not in control, someone's in control. But that really isn't the case. We human beings, much as we flatter ourselves otherwise, much as our pride would like to tell us otherwise, we don't control everything. And crazy unforeseen events just happen. And as the election year heats up, those unforeseen events, with or without the cooperation of human free will, can happen more frequently. And what the only thing to expect in a life where we do not ultimately have control ultimately is going to be the unexpected. You can count on that with certainty. So anyway, praying for everybody involved. And if any more updates come in during the member block, we will let you know. The rest of the show continues now into the member block. You do not want to miss it. It is Tuesday. That means it is Teehee Tuesday. Become a member. Use code Knowles, K-N-O-W-L-E-S, at checkout for 2 months free on all annual plans.